Hello, welcome to Science TLDR.
Hi. So today we're doing a deep dive into some, well, really clever molecular engineering. It's from a paper called Improving Dual Targeting Selectivity in T-Cell Engagers via Synapse-Gated and Affinity-Tuned Trispecific Antibody Design, and it was published in the journal MABS.
Yes, T-Cell Engagers, or TCEs. If you follow immunotherapies, you know these are pretty revolutionary.
Definitely. They're a drug modality that basically redirects a patient's own T-cells to go kill cancer cells. Simple concept, powerful effect.
And it's a big but. They have this major limitation, right? Especially with solid tumors. What's the sort of core problem they're tackling here?
Yeah, the central problem is the target. With solid tumors, you rarely find antigens that are only on the cancer cells.
Right. They're usually tumor-associated antigens, TAAs, meaning they're also on healthy cells, maybe at lower levels.
Exactly. And if your TCE hits both tumor and healthy tissue, well, you get these awful on-target, off-tumor toxicities. It's a huge barrier.
Which really boils down to a terrible therapeutic index, the TI. The effective dose is just way too close to the toxic dose.
Precisely. So what these researchers aimed for was building a safety mechanism directly into the drug molecule. They used this single molecule conditional trispecific antibody, a TriMab, to get what they call AND-gated targeting.
AND-gated, I like that. It's a very logical name. It means the T cell only gets the go signal if it sees two things at once.
That's it. It requires binding to TAA1 and concurrently TAA2 before the T cell gets activated.
So it's like a conditional activation designed to ignore cells with just one target, presumably the healthy ones, and only go after the double positive cancer cells.
You got it. So just to be clear on our terms here, TCE is the general drug class redirecting T cells. TAA is the target protein on the cell surface. This TriMab is their specific new trispecific antibody. And AND-gated targeting is the goal needing both TAA1 and TAA2.
Okay, let's unpack the actual engineering, because how they built this TriMab is pretty intricate. They started with the DuetMab scaffold, which is already clinically validated.
Yeah, starting with something known as SMART gives you a better shot at developability down the line. But assembling these things is still complex. You've got three different arms trying to come together correctly.
Two for the tumor antigens, one for the T cell's CD3 receptor.
Right. So they use the classic knob into hole or KH mutations. It's a well-established technique to make sure the two different heavy chains pair up heterodimerize properly.
Okay. Heavy chains sorted. What about the light chains? That's often where you get messy mixtures with multispecifics.
Good point. They tackled that using something called orthogonal Fab pairing. It's basically a clever chemical trick ensuring the correct light chain only pairs with its intended heavy chain, like a molecular lock and key.
And did it work? Did they get clean assembly?
Yeah, their manufacturing data showed it worked really well. High purity, close to the expected ratio of light chains, which is, you know, critical for a viable drug product.
And beyond just putting it together, they tweaked the antibody's base, the FSC region, to prevent unwanted immune activation.
Correct. They introduced three specific mutations, L234F, L235E, P331S, in the FC domain. The goal was basically to silence it, to significantly reduce any unwanted FC-mediated immune effector functions. Makes the whole thing safer, more inert, until it finds its specific targets.
Okay, structure and safety basics covered. Now, the really ingenious bit, the three design features that actually create this AND gate conditionality. It's about where the arms are and how tightly they bind, right?
Exactly. It all comes down to affinity and geometry. Feature one is the anchoring arm, TAA1. In their main example, this was an antibody against RR1.
Okay, the anchor.
And crucially, it's a high affinity binder. It grabs on really tight. But, and this is key, it's designed to be non-active. It's positioned in trans, sort of on the opposite side from the T-cell recruiting CD3 arm.
So it binds strongly, but because of where it is or maybe its specific binding site, it can't actually trigger the T-cell by itself.
Precisely. It can't form a functional immunological synapse, or IS, on its own. It's just there to hold the molecule onto the cell, a passive lock.
Got it. High grip anchor, but no trigger. What about the arm that is supposed to pull the trigger, the TAA2 arm?
That's feature two, the active arm. TAA2. In their system, this targeted EGFR. Now, this arm is intentionally engineered to be affinity attenuated. Its binding is much weaker.
Weaker binding.
Yeah, and it's positioned in cis, so it's right next to or proximal to the anti-CD3 domain.
Huh. Why make the arm that needs to activate the T cell weaker? Seems like you'd lose potency.
But that's the clever part. On its own, this weak active arm just can't hold the T-cell close enough to a single positive target cell for long enough to form that stable IS and trigger activation. It binds, but it lets go too easily.
Okay, so how does it ever work then?
It works only when the whole molecule is first stabilized by that high-affinity anchoring arm grabbing TAA1. Once the anchor is locked on, that weak TAA2 binding gets a massive boost from being held in proximity. It's an avidity effect.
Ah, I see. So the anchor provides the stability, and only then can the weak active arm effectively engage the T-cell machinery.
You've nailed it. The two arms together achieve the stable interaction needed for IS formation, something neither could do alone on a single positive cell. The high-affinity anchor locks it down, then the weak active arm engages CD3.
And the third piece is just the anti-CD3 arm itself, the T-cell recruiter, which only functions properly once that whole dual-arm synapse is stabilized.
Correct.
Okay, so if weakening the active arm's affinity is the key adjustment here, how much did they actually have to weaken it?
They tested different versions, right?
Yeah.
Using ROR1 as the anchor and EGFR as the active target.
They did. They created three variants of the anti-EGFR arm based on the GA201 clone. Variant 1, V1, was the high-affinity wild type, around 0.7 millinifs.
Pretty tight binding.
Yeah. Then V2 was intermediate, about 8 millinem, roughly an 8-fold reduction in affinity. And V3 was the low-affinity one, at 32 nanonem. So that's about a 30-fold drop compared to the original.
And how did this tuning affect the selectivity? They used this metric, the full change parameter, FCP. Remind us what that means again. All right, the FCP is basically a ratio measuring safety. It's the drug concentration needed to kill the unwanted cells. The single positive ones divided by the concentration needed to kill the target cells, the double positive ones. Higher FCP means much better selectivity, better safety.
So what did they find with the different affinities?
Well, the high affinity V1 variant, almost useless for selectivity. FCP was only 3. Practically no safety window there.
Okay, not good.
But the low affinity RR1 EGFRV3 trimab, that gave an amazing result.
Oh, amazing.
An FCP of 502.
Wow, 502, that's a massive jump in selectivity, over 500 times more selective for the double positive cells.
Exactly. And that translates directly into potentially widening that therapeutic index.
Mm-hmm.
What's also really important is how it killed the cells. While this V3 variant still reached 90% maximal T cell killing, so it was still potent, it barely caused any release of those inflammatory cytokines like TNF-alpha or IL-6.
So potent killing without the systemic inflammatory storm, that's huge.
It really is. It suggests they managed to decouple the potency from that dangerous side effect, at least in vitro.
But they needed to check how this was working, right? To confirm it was actually this conditional synapse formation, they used imaging.
Yes, confocal imaging. They use these things called supported lipid bilayers. SLBs. Yep. They're basically artificial cell membranes on a slide, which let you watch the molecular interactions in real time.
What were they looking for specifically?
They were watching for the formation of the immunological synapse, IS. That's the structured junction between the T cell and the target cell that signals activation. They saw that the non-selective, high-affinity RR1 EGFR V1 trimab just caused EGFR clustering IS formation, whether RR1 was there or not. It was just too sticky, basically.
No conditionality there, but the selective V3 version.
It performed exactly as designed. It only triggered that EGFR clustering and the functional IS when both RR1 and EGFR were present on the SLB.
Okay, so that really locks down the mechanism. It confirms the selective activation depends on the anchor being there to stabilize the whole interaction. A true AIMD gate at the cell surface. Now, one successful example is great, but does this concept work with other targets? They tested generalizability by swapping the anchor, right? Using anti-HR2 instead of anti-RR1.
They did. And this is where it got even more interesting, because it showed how much the precise location of binding matters. Molecular geometry turned out to be critical.
How so?
They tried two different anti-HER2 antibodies as anchors. One was trastuzumab, a famous drug, which binds HER2 close to the cell membrane in domain the fifth, membrane proximal.
Okay, close to the membrane.
The other was a different antibody, clone 4380, which binds much further away from the membrane in domain ABM membrane distal.
So binding near the membrane versus far from it, did it make a difference?
A huge difference. The membrane proximal binder, trastuzumab, when used as the anchor, it basically failed to give good selectivity. The FCP was only around 10 to 15.
So not much better than the non-selective EGFR version. The geometry must have been wrong somehow.
That's the interpretation. Maybe too crowded or the wrong angle, it just couldn't create that necessary conditional tension. But the membrane distal binder, clone 4380.
Let me guess, much better.
Phenomenally better. With that as the anchor, they got FCPs ranging from 713 all the way up to 1100.
Wow, over 1,000-fold selectivity. That really hammers home the point about geometry.
It does. It's a major insight for anyone designing these things.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just pick targets. You have to think about where on the target you bind, because that geometry dictates whether the conditional synapse can form properly.
Okay, impressive in vitro selectivity, proof of mechanism, and it seems generalizable if you pick the right geometry. Did it hold up in an animal model?
In vivo. They used mice, right?
Yes, NSG mice with human tumor xenografts. And the results were very encouraging. The optimized RRR1-EGFRV3 TriMab led to complete tumor growth inhibition, TGI.
Complete inhibition. Nice.
And just as importantly, the control molecule, the one with just the active EGFRV3 arm but no RR1 anchor, it showed zero TGI. None at all. So that really confirms the AND gate requirement in vivo. It only worked when both targets were present on the tumor.
Exactly. Selective AND-gated activity in a living system.
What about the practical stuff? Can you actually manufacture these complex things reliably? And how do they behave in the body, their pharmacokinetics, PK? Sometimes complex antibodies are unstable or clear too quickly.
That's always a concern. But here the news was also good. The TriMab constructs were robust. Good manufacturability, high monomer content. They were thermostable up to over 61 degrees C, which is great.
And the PK half-life.
In special mice that express the human FcRn receptor, which helps antibodies last longer, they showed typical antibody-like PK. Half-lives were around 4.2 to 5.8 days. That's very reasonable for dosing.
Okay, that's promising for translation. One other potential issue with high-affinity anchors is the sink effect, the drug getting mopped up by healthy cells expressing just the anchor target. Did they address that?
They did. They specifically tested this by adding a large excess of cells expressing only ROR1, the anchor target, to mimic healthy tissue. And they found that the high-affinity RR1 anchor did not cause a significant sink effect. The drug levels remained effective.
That's a relief. It suggests the anchor doesn't just get immediately sucked out of circulation by single positive healthy tissue.
Right. It seems like a well-managed balance in their design. So overall, it really looks like a potentially successful and generalizable way to build these conditional AND-gated TCEs, a potential solution to a major safety problem in the field.
Okay, let's try and distill this down. What are the sort of three biggest takeaways for people listening, thinking about the impact of this work?
Okay, three key results. First, and maybe most practically important, affinity is the selectivity lever that RRR1-EGFRV3 TriMab, just by tuning down the active arm affinity 30-fold, got that massive 500-fold plus improvement in selectivity. And crucially, this achieved potent killing with low cytokine release. That's the path to a wider therapeutic index.
Right. Affinity tuning equals safety tuning, essentially. What's the second takeaway?
Second, the mechanism is confirmed. Conditional synapse formation is required. The imaging studies really showed that the weaker active arm only forms that functional IS when it's physically stabilized by the high-affinity anchor binding simultaneously. It's a structural requirement. The T cell literally needs both hands grabbing the target cell before it activates.
Makes sense.
And the third.
Third takeaway has to be molecular geometry is pivotal. Choosing the anchor's binding site, its epitope, drastically changes the outcome. Remember the HER2 example? The membrane distal anchor gave FCPs over 700, while the membrane proximal one was basically non-selective. So designers absolutely have to think in 3D about the geometry, not just the targets themselves.
Okay, those are clear takeaways. Affinity, conditional synapse, and geometry. Now, this all sounds incredibly promising, especially for solid tumors where specificity has been such a roadblock. But we should probably maintain some scientific caution, right? What challenges still remain? Oh, absolutely. We need to be objective. Even with this clever design, challenges persist. One is still the potential for target-mediated drug disposition, or TMDD, the sink effect, especially if the anchor target is highly expressed on vital healthy tissues. They showed it wasn't an issue in their model, but real-world human tissues are complex.
That's fair. What else?
The other big one is tumor evolution. Because you now require two targets for full potency, you create an escape route for the cancer. If it just learns to downregulate or lose expression of one of the TAAs, the drug might become ineffective. Dual targeting means dual vulnerability to escape.
That's a really important point. So while solving one problem, you potentially introduce another complexity. Okay, so bearing those caveats in mind, let's finish with a thought for our listeners to chew on.
Right. So given these really dramatic gains in selectivity, going from almost no safety margin to over 500-fold, potentially even 1,000-fold with the right geometry, How might this kind of dual-targeting AMD-gated approach move beyond cancer?
Where else might you need that level of precision?
Think about conditions where you need extreme safety, like maybe depleting a very specific problematic cell population in severe autoimmune diseases without hitting closely related necessary cells. Could this AMD gate strategy offer the precision needed for those kinds of non-oncology applications?
That's a fascinating thought, using this level of molecular engineering for highly targeted cell removal outside of cancer.
Yeah, that definitely opens up some interesting possibilities.
It suggests the ability to target based on a pair of antigens, not just one, could unlock therapies for a whole range of diseases we currently struggle to treat precisely.
A really innovative piece of antibody engineering, pushing the boundaries of selectivity.